You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verhet. Now, the English language has a lot of strange spellings, pronunciations, and rules. There are silent letters, unexpected pronunciations, and expressions that don't make a lot of sense when you really think about them. Our guest today wanted to know why noses run and feet smell, why of isn't spelled with a V, and why the British put a U in the word color, and we don't. So she wrote a book about it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What weird English language rules stand out to you? What words do you think are spelled strangely or pronounced funny if English isn't your first language? What parts were the hardest for you to learn? What made the least sense to you? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Erica Okrent is a linguist and author of the book Highly Irregular, Why Tough, Through, and Dough Don't Rhyme, and Other Oddities of the English Language. Erica, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we dig into some of the big picture stuff, let's start with one example that illustrates a lot of it right out of the title of your book. Tough, through, dough, throw in a hiccup and some others there. O-U-G-H. Why don't all words with that letter cluster rhyme?
Yeah, they look the same. It seems like they should sound the same, but we have just a mess of different pronunciations. Sometimes it's an F, like a cough, or sometimes it's not pronounced at all. The vowels are all different. And the reason, as with most weird things about English, is history and the unusual history of the language. That GH there in those words we used to pronounce, it's an old sound that English doesn't have anymore. That's sort of like a ch sound, a blech sound. And if you look at some words in German and their English counterparts, you can see like night, nacht, light, licht, neighbor, nachbar. That's still in German. And they go back, both German and English, go way back to the same distant ancestor. So we had that sound, and we had it long enough to get it into the writing, but we didn't keep it, and now it shifted and changed in various ways, giving us all kinds of different pronunciations, but not before it got settled in the writing.
And it got settled in different ways, because as you mentioned, sometimes that sound turned into an F, sometimes it disappeared altogether. So maybe that town over there won on dough, and that town over there won on tough?
Yeah, and sometimes there's still two. So we have dough, but there's in England, there's a dessert called plum duff that they eat at Christmas time. And that's the same word. They say duff. And it went on to that usage. But in other places, it became dough. So yeah, just to make it more confusing.
And this example illustrates the main theme of your book, that we can look at English in 2022 and say, yeah, it's just English. It's weird. And there aren't any rules. But all of this stuff comes out of a long history, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not random. It feels like it's very random and unexplainable. It's not random and it's not unexplainable, but that doesn't mean it's logical. So things change in one place, but not in another. Things change at one point in history, and that leaves lumps and bumps that don't get changed later. So we can explain it, but sometimes it's a pretty involved explanation. But it is there, and we don't have to feel like it's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense. Well, it doesn't make any sense, but there's a reason for it.
Now, we asked our listeners on the Ideas Network Facebook page for some of their examples, and the first one we got is the first one you tackle in the book. Ted just had a one-word answer to our question, colonel, like the rank in the army, C-O-L-O-N-E-L. There's not an R in sight, and we say colonel, and that's got a trilingual story you write in the book.
Yeah, how do you spell this word? How do you say this word? They don't match at all, but they did at one time. When we first got the word colonel, we borrowed it from French, who at that time said coronel, so we took coronel, and we dropped some syllables from coronel to colonel. That's a very typical thing that happens in language change. But then in the, you know, the 15th, 1600s, people went back to the source of these words, which was Italian, and started reading these old Italian military treatises. And they said, ah, colonel, that's what it was in Italian. French had changed the L to the R in coronel. So we looked at that, those old texts, and said, oh, well, it's properly, it should be colonel. And if you were educated and wanted to show that you were educated, you started writing it colonel. And French actually changed, they say colonel now, but we kept saying colonel, but while writing it colonel. And some people tried to change the pronunciation, but it's much harder to change how people speak than it is to change how they write, because it's a certain class of people are doing the writing and they get to make the decisions for the writing, but they can't necessarily say, okay, everyone, you know, now we're going to pronounce it this way. And so we're lucky we get both. We get the whole range.
We're talking to Erica Okrent, a linguist, author of the new book, Highly Irregular, Why Tough, Through, and Dough Don't Rhyme, and Other Oddities of the English Language. You can join in with your own examples. What are the things that stand out to you as weird in the way we spell or say words in English? Do you have a question for our guest about why these things happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, we got into that early Germanic stuff. We've borrowed one from the French. Those are two big sections of your book. You just mentioned written English, and a thing that locked in a lot of weirdnesses is the invention of the printing press. What happened?
Yeah, the printing press made it easier to produce written texts in English. Written texts were being produced before then, but at the time it was, you know, 1476, that's when it came to England. And English was in kind of a transition at that point because it had stopped being a written language for a few hundred years after the French takeover. People were still speaking English, but the writing was in French and or in Latin. It was controlled by the class of people who do the writing, and they were not speaking English. They were doing French or Latin. So English is starting to become a written language again, and how we, it's very different now. How do we spell things? How do we write things? The language is not the same as it was when we had a writing system of old English. So it's up in flux. It's changing. Meanwhile, the printing press is doing great. People love having the ability to print out things and spread them around, but nobody's doing it consistently. There's no such thing as a dictionary. There's no such thing as an editor or a book of here's our house style. Everyone's winging it, doing different things based on their pronunciation, based on what they've seen before. And it's all spreading around really fast now because we can produce the texts so much faster. So that period of time, it was really unlucky that the time when the printing press came, the language wasn't in a position to be settled. It was very much in flux. And so it settled in this way, in that way, in this place, in that place, in all kinds of different ways. And now we're stuck with the results because you can't change it now.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Laura is with us in Madison. Laura, hi. Are you there, Laura?
Hi, I'm here. I was wondering what the difference was between awesome and awful. Why, if there's some awe, why wouldn't it be full of awe? And awful means something completely different. Thank you.
Interesting, Laura. Thanks, Erica.
Yeah, that's a very typical thing we do in English and other languages too. We have sort of opposite meaning words from the same root. So we, awful is bad and awesome is good. We have, terrible is bad and terrific is good, but those both come from terror. And it's kind of similar to awe because awe was fear. That's something you tremble with awe before a great power. And that to be awful would to be sort of having this feeling of fear, trembling before power. So how do we get from that to awesome? Well, fear, we like to use fear to intensify what we're trying to say. So when words get a little stale or a little boring, we don't want to say, oh, that was, you know, that was a really good performance. We want to say, oh, that was frightfully good, which was, you know, that was popular a few decades ago. But another way to do that is to say it was, you know, it was awesome. Like, it was so good. It was scary good. You know, that's something we do now. We use fear to intensify the positive emotion we want to express. And we have a few vocabulary items that are, that have made that flip back and forth. Fear is a really great way to freshen up your vocabulary when it's starting to get boring and stale.
We're having an awfully good conversation with linguist Erica Okrand about her latest book, Highly Irregular, Why Tough, Through, and Dough Don't Rhyme, and Other Oddities of the English Language. You can share your favorites or confusions at 800-642-1234. What English pronunciations and or spelling strike you as odd? Do you wonder why certain words look the way they do? What are your favorite or least favorite quirks of this English language? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with linguist Erica Okrent. Her latest book is called Highly Irregular, Why Tough, Through, and Dough Don't Rhyme, and Other Oddities of the English Language. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234 with your questions about the origins of certain strangenesses in the English language, the way we spell and pronounce and say stuff. Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Anne is with us in Madison. Hi, Anne.
Hi. So I teach preschool and kindergarten, and we don't really worry about spelling at this age. It's not the most important thing at all, but the children who are ready for spelling are so confused. They're like, they see this O-U-G-H and they see enough and through, and they're just like, what? Why?
What do you tell them, Anne, when they ask you why?
I basically say what the author said at the very beginning. I say, English is weird, you know, and sometimes I give little hints towards, you know, oh, we our language comes from several other languages. But, you know, it's a pretty complex topic for a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
And so I was really wondering, though, I had read this study that said that there are languages that are orthographically simple, whereas ours has orthographic complexity, which basically means weird spellings, mm-hmm. as far as I understand it. And that our language and languages with this complexity take like 3 years longer for children to learn to write.
Interesting. And thanks for the call. And I know, Erica, I try and fail to learn Spanish. And the letter, one thing I like is the letters. You see that letter? It's always going to be said the same pretty much. Is English orthographically complex, like Anne said? Does it make it harder to learn to spell?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's not as hard to learn to spell or to write as Mandarin or something. That takes a lot longer. But of all the languages that use the Latin alphabet, English is the most confusing because the Latin alphabet and its adoption happened at more convenient times in other languages, either after they had already gone through major changes or before. So it might be inconsistent, like French has a lot of, you know, rules you have to learn, but you can fit them all on a few pages and they're pretty consistent. Polish looks very complex to us, but it's very simple. You can put all the rules on a page and know how to pronounce it. And most languages that use the Latin alphabet are like that. But no, English to list all of its exceptions and rules takes about 450 pages. That's the most complete explanation of English spelling is ridiculous that way. So yeah, it is. Learning to read and write English is a lot more difficult than it is in other languages because of that, the bad timing of the printing press, which is when things get settled. How do we spell this? What's our habit? That happened over the course of a couple hundred years, but at a very bad time when the language was really changing. The whole vowel system was changing. English had not been written that much before. So it was a bad stroke of bad luck for English writing.
Thanks for the call. And we'll go to Marie now in Eau Claire. Marie, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Marie?
Hey, I just was going to coattail on that comment. I'm just wondering, I know the printing press was invented a long time ago, but I'm wondering why there can't be a few spelling changes a year. You know, we have a few new words a year. There's a couple of words that would be so helpful if we could change them. I'm a reading tutor, especially silent letters. Couldn't we all agree on 5 or 10 a year that we drop the G in knife or we drop the G in gnome? That would just make it easier for everyone. Is there a reason we can't have a consensus to make these type of progressive changes?
Marie, thanks for that call. Actually, it's even worse than that, Erica. If I remember correctly, when we were trying to standardize English, we actually added in some silent letters because people thought it'd be more consistent, like O-U-G-H has got added where they hadn't been before.
Yeah. Sometimes like the word haughty is didn't originally have that G-H in there, but it seemed to look better. And we do and have made decisions based on the look of words. So like the word could did not have an L in it. But should and would did, because those come from shall and will. So there's a reason for the L in should and would. Could comes from can. There was no reason for there to be an L, but it fits together with those two other words. They're similar in function. They're similar in form. It just evened out the little paradigm there to put the L in. So, that's sort of the opposite of what you're saying. Putting in letters where they never were and shouldn't be is something we've also done. But people have tried. They have tried over and over again to simplify English spelling. Many proposals have been put out. Many people have, they've created a whole journal written in simple English or whatever their system is. And the problem is that it just looks too funny. It's sort of like when you see one of those meme, like I Ken has cheeseburger type writing. If you see a lot of text in simplified English, it looks funny to us. And it's even harder to read for people who have already become literate. Now, if you're just learning to read, it would make sense. But it's kind of too late. We have too much of a habit already established so that if we try to simplify too much, it actually becomes harder to recognize the word fast enough because we don't sound things out so much when we're reading, unless it's an unfamiliar word. We recognize. So it's the balance between the people who already know it and the people who are trying to learn it. And it's really hard to make the change for the benefit of the people who are trying to learn it when there are so many people who just have the habit already.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Erica Okrent. Her new book is called Highly Irregular. It's about the weirdnesses of the English language, how they got there. Back to your calls. Fawn is with us in Madison. Hi, Fawn.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that same topic. My godfather, my late godfather, John Malone, he invented an alternate orthography for English where there was one letter for each phoneme, for each sound that's in the English language, and one letter per sound. He called it unifon, U-N-I-F-O-N. So there wouldn't be those irregularities of Q-U. That would be K-W or, the rest that you're describing. And it's like, it's as you said, those things never catch on. Like hooked on phonics, that can't be turned into our regular everyday spelling because people are too attached to the old traditions, I guess you could say. But it's a shame, really, because given that English is de facto the world's universal language, lingua franca, as it were, universal language, people from all over the globe shouldn't have to learn this convoluted and tortured spelling just to communicate with each other. And so what you're describing is that you're saying that English is, in essence, part phonetic but part ideograms in the wake of the word, and you recognize the meaning even before you recognize the, or at the same time as you recognize the.
Gotcha. Fawn, we don't have too much time left. Looks like 40 letters in that Unifon system. Erica, the tricky thing here is trying to change language in any way by doing it on purpose.
Yeah, this is, language is, it's a part of nature. It's a human behavior, and it's not amenable to control from above. So, invent a new language that has no irregularities and perfect match between meaning and form. You can spend your lifetime inventing that, but that has nothing to do with, if you make it perfect, but how will you get people to use it? That's the part that just, it doesn't follow. It's very hard to make people change their language from above with some kind of system, no matter how perfect the system is. But it's also, perfect is in the eye of the beholder, and everybody who's created these has come up with a different way of doing it. And also, if you're doing it for spelling, it's based on your pronunciation, which differs from other people's. You know, people have accents, people pronounce vowels differently, people do or do not pronounce certain letters in different places. And so who's gets to be the official version? That's always going to come up when you're trying to create a perfect spelling.
Erica, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today. That's Erica Okrent, linguist and author of the book Highly Irregular, Why Tough, Through, and Dough Don't Rhyme and Other Oddities of the English Language. You can keep sharing your strangenesses and oddities of the English language, by the way, over on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or share your favorites, email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, cutting down air pollution could save a lot of lives. That's according to some new UW research. We'll talk to one of the researchers about those findings. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll hear the story of a Wisconsin man who got a wrongful conviction overturned and went on to become a lawyer working to help other wrongfully convicted people in the criminal justice system. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Jarrett Adams spent nearly a decade in prison here in Wisconsin after a wrongful conviction for sexual assault. After getting his conviction overturned, his record expunged, he became an attorney himself, working with others who are wrongfully behind bars and with people who have long sentences for minor offenses. He shares his story in his new book, a firsthand account of some of the injustices in our criminal justice and prison systems, and how he's trying to make them right. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or someone you know spent time in the criminal justice system? How did it impact life after getting out? What barriers to reentry did you encounter? Do you have questions for our guest about his experience and the justice system here in Wisconsin, which has the worst racial disparity for imprisonment in the entire country? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jarrett Adams is an attorney and the author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. Jarrett, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate being back on.
Well, you've shared your story with us in the past. I want to focus in on a particular moment here. You write in your introduction, quoting, "In this country, we have two criminal justice systems, the one you can afford and the one you can't." Can you talk about how that system let you down? It worked differently for you and one of your then friends who was charged, was able to afford an attorney. Can you talk about that double system?
Yeah, it's a double system for sure. I mean, and you don't have to just take my words for it. You can look at the numbers and they glaringly show it. In my case in particular, there were three of us accused of the sexual assault. Only one of my friends was able to afford an attorney. Me and my other co-defendant, you know, we were assigned an attorney off of a panel list. And that directly impacted my case so much so that the retained attorney for my friend was filing motion after motion after motion. My attorney and my other co-defendant's panelist attorney as well never joined in this motion. They never gave us the opportunity to. They made the decision to proceed forward to trial And it was the fork in the road that took almost a decade of both of our lives.
And that's one of the most frustrating parts of your story to read, the interactions you had with lawyers during your trial. Can you talk about how that system let you down? And you write, it's not just that it's the lawyers themselves. Those public defenders are often overwhelmed with many cases.
They definitely are. And in particular, in my case, we didn't get public defenders. You know, the public defender's office was conflicted out. So we were assigned attorneys off of a panel list in the state of Wisconsin, and in other states as well. There's a panel list of attorneys who are assigned cases by the court. And the problem with that is this. First of all, the amount of pay is so low that you don't get the best representation. Not many attorneys are going to go do cases for $50 an hour or $70 an hour. And so that was, you know, a big issue in my case as well. And then, you know, it's one of these things, Rob, where you're on an island and you are facing the might of the entire system. They're not playing when they say state versus whoever it is. And it was just glaring. No investigator was hired in my case. And I thought it was just me. When I got to prison, and when I started to meet other men and helping them with their cases and learn about their cases, I saw this across the board.
You spent time, almost 10 years, in Wisconsin's prison system. And you write that for people there wrongly or who are guilty, you don't see the prison system doing a lot of good to turn them around. What were some of the biggest flaws, the problems you saw in Wisconsin prisons?
You know, it's just, first of all, there's overcrowding. It's way too many people who are in prison, and they are in prison as a result of these old draconian sentences and the ways in which we feel like lock them up, throw away the key forever. And so, you know, you're in this prison, and these mandatory sentences, they are the seed for hopelessness. If people know that they're going to be in prison, no matter how good they are, no matter how much they change and how much they reform, if they know they're going to be in prison for two decades, there's no incentive for them to do anything positive at all. So that was one of the biggest things. Another thing is this, Rob, there's no correcting at all going on. You're being warehoused in this prison, and you're pretty much just getting up, going to sleep, getting up, going to sleep. There has to be an investment in the people that are there. Inmates are people as well. And you just don't see the educational, you know, tools being handed out. Most people who are incarcerated will go home at some point. And we are doing a horrible job of preparing people to reintegrate back into society.
Talking to Jarrett Adams, attorney, author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Jarrett, something I hadn't known until I read your book, you ended up in Bosco Bell, once called the Supermax prison in Wisconsin, billed as being this site for the worst of the worst in the prison system. How did you end up there?
So you know that old saying in baseball, if you build it, they will come? That's exactly what Boscoville was. There was this rush to build this sparkling brand new facility for the worst of the worst. And it was one of these things where they took the Jeffrey Dahmer murder and they used that to scare people into getting the funding to build this prison. And when they built it, there was no worst of the worst like that. There was only a handful of people who you could say even, you know, deserved or met the criteria to be there. So what they did was this. They started to, like almost like a quota ticket system, they started to create allegations of confidential informants and putting people in segregation for 360 days at a time. And they swept me up in one of those. And they did this in large part because I continued to litigate against the Department of Corrections, their handbook, and some of the things that we weren't getting access to education-wise in there. So it's just, you know, it was one of these things where you had this message going out that it was necessary, that it was needed, but then you saw people going there for, they broke off the front of their razor to get a close shave, or, you know, this person had food in his cell. And it just was ridiculous. And I don't think anyone really looked under the hood until, you know, they had so many people packed and the litigation finally opened up Boscoville to a normal prison that it is now.
Okay, Jarrett, you spend almost, again, 10 years. You've been working on your case the whole time. The Innocence Project helps out. Finally, you get the conviction overturned. Your record was expunged. If you had said, I'm going to stay as far away from prisons and the legal system as I possibly can, I would get it. You went the opposite direction. What made you decide to become a lawyer and work to prevent this from happening to other people?
You know, I will. There are certain things that I will never forget, you know, being in prison for so long. And one of the things isn't an act of violence. It was looking at the creases of pain and anguish on my mother's face. You know, I'll never forget seeing that. And I also acknowledge this. Look, this started because I told my parents I was going to spend the night over a friend's house. My friends told their parents they were spending the night over my house. So we snuck to Wisconsin to go to this party. And it just was the worst fears realized. I now know why my mother was creative and keeping me busy in the summer. And, you know, all type of things that African-American parents have to do to keep their kids out of trouble. And so when I came home, I knew I had a penchant for the law, and it became a passion, and I was driven to remove the wrinkles and creases of anguish off of other mothers' faces as well.
You had vowed you wouldn't come back to Wisconsin unless you did it as an attorney. Can you share this moment, you share it in the book, at the state capitol, I think it was, when you were sworn into the Wisconsin bar?
You know, I was sworn into the Wisconsin bar by Keith Finley. So it was
of the Innocence Project.
Yeah, of the Innocence Project. And so it was really, you know, really a dream type moment, you know, to hear him, you know, swear me in, you know, motion that I get in and I be accepted and acknowledged by all of the justices. And I'll make this point too, Rob. If the justices, if the courts could see me as I am now, when I was a 17-year-old, I never would have been sentenced to 28 years in prison. And so I think it's a point that I want to emphasize on, and I enjoyed the moment, and it inspired me to keep going to create other Jarrett Adams.
We're talking to Jarrett Adams, attorney, author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced the criminal justice system on either side as someone accused of a crime, somebody defending that person, somebody prosecuting it? Have you seen somebody in your family go through this experience? Have you yourself? What could we do better, do you think, here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions for our guest. It's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Jarrett Adams about his new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. Now an attorney, he was wrongfully convicted, spent almost 10 years in jail, or in prison, I should say, before the conviction was overturned, his record expunged. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Alicia is with us in Portage. Alicia, hi. Alicia, are you there? Nope. Let's go to Vivian then in Green Bay. Vivian, hello.
Hello. I am a product of a very rural Wisconsin community. I'm in my 70s and watching exposés, going back to the New York Five, to so many things through the Innocence Project, I think justice system is a misnomer. And when anyone refers to it that way, I say we don't have a justice system, we have a judicial system, and I've never had any encounters in that system, but I don't see it as a justice system.
Vivian, thanks a lot for the call. Jarrett, what do you think of Vivian's distinction?
I agree, and it's, you know, it's encouraging, you know, to have, you know, someone in Green Bay in their 70s, who's been around a while and seen a lot in life, you know, to acknowledge that. And now we just need the officials, the lawmakers, to acknowledge it as well. We have a system that pounds people, especially people of color. One in every 36 Black Wisconsin adults is incarcerated in a state prison in Wisconsin. I mean, that number should make everyone drop what they're doing and turn their attention to fixing this system.
Thanks for that call, Vivian, at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Pierre in La Crosse. Pierre, hi.
Yeah, I am calling because the justice system, there is a white justice system and there is a black justice system, which you can't even say called justice system, because I have a family member that was charged with a crime. They charged with the highest crime in order for them to just try to negotiate it to a lower crime where they should have charged them that at, in the first place. And in the same person, they were charged high with a felony. And I know another person that did almost the same crime. They got charged with two different felony, but that person with the two different felony end up having no probation, nothing to do because they were white. And that other family member ended up having to be on probation for a year and paying a whole bunch of fines that he cannot even afford.
Pierre, thanks for the call. Is this a common story, you think, Jarrett? Two different systems, Pierre says, depending on race.
Absolutely. I mean, and I think people should you know, just look at the numbers. You know, look at the recent article that came out. You know, in Wisconsin, 42% of the state prison population in 2019 was African Americans. I mean, just think about that. Think about the number of residents in the population in Milwaukee, which is the biggest jurisdiction where the African-American population is. I mean, if you think about the men that we have incarcerated and you think about the issues that exist within the inner cities, you're taking away a proponent that could fix, that can change, that can mentor. We're literally throwing away people with this truth in sentencing. And it was ran on the basis of, let's do truth in sentencing. Let's, you know, have all of these sentences where we give this time and they have to complete it because it'll make us safer. Rob, it's not safer. It's not.
Pierre, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And Pierre's call reminds me, Jarrett, he talked about, you know, being charged with one thing and settling for a lesser offense, something you learned from your personal experience. And then again, as an attorney, is a lot of times people, especially maybe a young person in that situation, it's complicated. Courts are complicated things. They may not be getting good advice when they're making that kind of decision on the spot.
Absolutely. And there's also this, Rob. Look, people make decisions sometimes to get out of the pain that they're in. And I met a number of different men who pled guilty just to get out of the Milwaukee House of Corrections, only to come back and go to prison because they were on parole. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we have to inject in our system is this. We have to get more therapists, social workers, forensic psychologists. We need to allow the world of therapy to mend this system. I mean, I'm talking about both ends, right? I'm talking about both correctional officers. I've seen and have befriended some correctional officers who come in to these jobs and within, you know, a year or even months, I mean, it's almost like they're an inmate as well. They're feeling the effects of this system, which is telling us something. The system isn't working.
Talking to Jarrett Adams, attorney. He was wrongfully convicted, spent almost 10 years in Wisconsin prisons. His new book is called Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. Jarrett, wrongfully convicted. You're in prison for so long, 360 days in segregation, as we mentioned, at Bosque Bell. What got you through?
You know, I had a round table of angels and my mother and my two aunts, and I opened the book up, Redeeming Justice, the first page is a dedication to them. And what they would do is they would write letters in a staggered approach. One would write a letter on Monday, the other on Wednesday, the other on Friday. And they would write these letters and they would, you know, have Bible verses inside of them. And, you know, I asked my aunt, you know, because she would give me like the newspaper subscription. I would get it late. And I asked her, I said, why do you, you know, send this paper still and you guys write these letters? I hear from you guys enough. I'll talk. And she says, no, listen, there's a reason why we're doing it. And the reason why we're doing it is this. We've acknowledged that they've confined your body, that you can never let them incarcerate your mind. And that was one of the things that kept me getting through. You know, when I came home and I was on a race pace to get this law degree. And I remember my boss at the time, I was working at the Federal Defender, you know, she was just like, you know, look, you got to take a break. Like, what are you, you know, moving so fast for? And the real reality, Rob, was this, that decade wasn't just stolen from me. It was stolen from my family as well. I was cookouts, fish fries before I went to prison. I come home, there's dialysis treatments, there are visits in old folks' homes. So I was racing because I wanted my aunts to see me get this law degree. And I was fortunate enough to get that done before my aunt Josephine passed away.
Let's go back to our callers now. Tina is with us in Shawano. Tina, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I've been a practicing attorney in Wisconsin for almost 34 years now. And I've been a prosecutor a couple times. I've been a defense attorney. I've been a social services attorney. I've been a judge on a few occasions. And, you know, my observation is that our system is not only broken, it's completely corrupt. You know, not only do we treat, you know, people of color, you know, differently, substantially differently, you know, it's really all about money. The courts have to, it's like any other bureaucracy, the courts have to make money. And they charge fines that no one can pay. No one can pay those, even if they have, you know, a decent job, which in Shawano is like $14 an hour. You know, they don't take an effect, you know, how this process affects families. You know, they drag out cases, they overcharge, they over-sentence. I mean, it's completely corrupt. It doesn't work at all. And if we want a system that works, we have to provide more of it. You know, for lack of a better word, in the Native American community, would call it a healing program.
Tina, thanks a lot for sharing your perspective. And Jarrett, that reminds me, part of your work now is on wrongful convictions. You're also worried about what Tina mentioned there, overcharging people for lesser crimes, either longer prison systems, sentences, or as Tina mentioned, unpayable fines.
Absolutely. I mean, Tina was spot on with that. We over-punish and pummel the poor. In our society, I want people to understand there are people in living in the inner city, you know, in Milwaukee, where every dollar and penny is accounted for month to month. And so, you know, a speeding ticket, a red light camera ticket or something like that can throw them off of their entire budget. You know, I also want to point out this, you know, I'm representing a guy right now, Antoine Robinson. You know, he was convicted of an armed robbery along with his co-defendant who was Caucasian. His co-defendant, you know, received a significantly less sentence and has been home now for quite some time after only serving about 7 years. Mr. Robinson has been in prison now for the last 20 years on an armed robbery where no one was killed and no one was shot. It makes absolutely no sense why we can't even get a court to you know, consider really using the law of sentence modifications. It's just, we have to overhaul the system, and that overhaul has to be more than just changing the faucet. We need to rip up the floor and change the pipes.
Jarrett, just in our last minute, do you see that happening anytime soon, that kind of reform, that kind of overhaul?
Well, it's anything like this on this grand scale is going to take a lot of folks, a lot of time and a lot of resources. And this has to be spearheaded by the law schools as well as the judicial system and the lawyers and prosecutors. Everyone has to have an all hands on deck approach. And I'll use this as an example. We just dealt with the pandemic where for a while people stopped fighting with each other because we were fighting this deadly virus. And you know what we did was come together and figure it out. And then we went back to fighting each other. But the point I'm making is if we all came together and decided to make change, real change, systematic change, where we got diverse people on the bench and in the prosecutor's office, we would have a much better system and we would have much better communities than we have right now.
Jarrett, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. You guys have me back anytime.
That's Jarrett Adams, attorney and author of the new book, Redeeming Justice, From Defendant to Defender, My Fight for Equity on Both Sides of a Broken System. If you want to listen back to this full conversation or hear any of the discussions we've had on Central Time, you can find them all on our online archives. Those are at WPR.org, along with a lot more. Articles from WPR's news department, podcasts, and live streams of WPR's two networks. And we're always happy to hear from you. If there's an issue you think needs more attention on the air, or if there are people working on it in your part of Wisconsin, we want to know about it. You can email us at centraltime@wpr.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.